Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, November 13th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, City Council Approves Partial Solution, by Trevor Hawes, Editorial Director. Fixing the firefighters' pension funding shortfall got a step closer toward a solution Tuesday morning after City Council approved a partial fix. The Midland Firemen's Relief and Retirement Fund Board voted unanimously November 4th to approve a funding resolution that would see a 5% change in firefighter benefits, adopting a 30-year actuarially determined contribution arrangement, and a cash infusion from the city, according to a previous Reporter Telegram report. The city's contribution to the fund is contingent on a vote by firefighters to reduce benefits by 5%. It's up to firefighters to determine how their benefits will change. City Finance Director Christy Weakland, who sits on the MFRRF board, told council members that firemen are already being educated about the plan. MFRRF approved the plan at a special meeting November 4th, which was the second time it faced a vote by the pension board. At its regular meeting October 30th, the resolution was added to the agenda shortly before the meeting, and unbeknownst to Weakland and Mayor Lori Blong, who also sits on the pension board. After lengthy debate at the October 30th meeting, Blong's request for a stay of at least 72 hours was approved so that she, Weakland, city staff, and city council could get a chance to look over the resolution, which they did at a special city council hours before the November 4th MFRRF meeting. At the city council meeting Tuesday, Councilman Scott Dufford expressed some concern over how fast the process was moving. By moving quickly, how much money will that save the community? Dufford asked. Blong responded that the pension problem increases by about $3.5 million per year for every year it isn't fixed. It's a costly thing to defer and delay, she said. City Manager Tommy Gonzalez added that a pension fund solution could be completed by the end of the year. In a statement to the Reporter Telegram after the meeting, Blong offered the following. With two unanimous votes, we passed the resolutions of the fund board last week, followed by the resolution of the City Council this week, to move forward with solving the unfunded liability of the fund. This marks a win for firefighters and their families, certainly. But this is also a win for all Midlanders, as we resolve the debt and prevent it from growing further. Blong added that the solution has three main parts. First, a vote of the firefighters to make a 5% change in benefits, which is in addition to the 7.1% in changes they made in summer 2023. Second, the city and firefighters move to an actuarially determined contribution rate beginning in 2025 to prevent an unfunded liability from occurring again in the future. Third, the city paying the difference of the deficit to bring the fund to a minimum of a 30-year amortization. This has been a complex problem, and I am thankful for our city council, for the MFRRF board, and for all the staff and experts who have worked with us to find a resolution, Blong said. The Professional Firefighters Association of Midland, a local organization that advocates for firefighters, weighed in on City Council's action after the meeting. The Professional Firefighters Association of Midland applauds the City Council for committing by resolution to an action they already knew would have to be taken to comply with state law, PFAM President Jesse Martinez said in a media statement. Even after the resolution, however, we are still uncertain as to how or when the city will source their lump sum amount. We look forward to the time, by September 1, 2025, when the city will actually deposit the funds into the excellent asset allocations of the pension fund's long-term investment portfolio. Other decisions at City Council meeting. City Council approves $1.5 million in block grants for local organizations and projects. Several local organizations have been approved to receive community development block grant funds. At its meeting Tuesday, City Council approved administering nearly $1.5 million in block grants to 9 organizations, with a 10th to be considered in December, as well as city projects. The block grants will fund the following organizations: Casa de Amigos Home Cleaning Program, $60,000. Casa de Amigos Senior Nutrition Program, $70,000. Church on Wheels Facility Floor Replacement Program, $23,000. Midland County Hospital District Mental Health and Wellness Program, $17,400. Midland Habitat for Humanity Improvements Project, $381,000. Mission Healthcare Take-Home Meal Program, $70,000. Salvation Army of Midland Homeless Nutrition Programs, $100,000. Senior Life Midland Meals on Wheels Weekend Program, $43,900. West Texas Food Bank Emergency Food Box Distribution Program, $81,000. Additionally, block grants will be used for several city efforts, including Owner-Occupied Housing Program, OHAP, Major Down Payment Assistance, $150,000. OHAP Minor Repair Program, $100,000. Dunnigan Park Restrooms, $150,000. Washington Park Water Slides Resurfacing, $50,000. Contingency funds total, $100,411. City Council votes to extend city limits to encompass Costco. City Council approved a pair of items that will help make Costco wholesale in Midland a reality. At its meeting Tuesday, November 12th, council members voted to extend city boundaries into the State Highway 191 corridor where Costco will be built. Council also approved of an initial zoning of Regional Retail District. Costco will be generally located in the area of State Highways 191 and 158. Incentive deals to bring Costco to Midland were announced in August to bring the retailer to Midland. In its deal with the city, Costco will receive a rebate of 50% from the city of its portion of real and personal property tax for 20 years, and a 100% rebate of the total of sales and use tax receipts for 30 years. Midland Development Corporation also offered its own package. Reimbursements from the MDC are not to exceed $6.5 million for infrastructure and site-related improvements. Costco must certify it has hired 100 new full-time equivalent jobs. The agreement is performance-based. Costco must make a minimum capital investment of $50 million in a 174,000-square-foot facility, which is slated to be the largest in Texas. Construction on the new Costco is supposed to begin no later than June 1, 2025, and completed no later than August 31, 2026. This article is entitled 77-Year-Old Critically Injured by B.K. Richter, staff writer. A 77-year-old Midland man has been sent to the hospital with life-threatening injuries following a crash Tuesday. Midland police reported responding to a crash at approximately 11:48 a.m. Tuesday. According to a city press release, MPD reported a 2000 Mazda B-Series pickup was stopped facing south while in the 3300 block of Mark Lane. The driver of the Mazda pickup was reported as James Holman Jr. The Mazda failed to yield the right-of-way to a 2024 Freightliner M2. The Freightliner was traveling west on Wadley Avenue, and the two vehicles collided in the intersection. Holman sustained life-threatening injuries in the collision and was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, MPD reported. The driver of the Freightliner sustained no injuries in the collision and was released on scene. The investigation is ongoing. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Biden EPA to charge first-ever methane fee for emissions. Trump expected to target fee on waste from oil and gas companies. By Matthew Daly, Associated Press. Washington. Oil and natural gas companies, for the first time, will have to pay a federal fee if they emit dangerous methane above certain levels, under a final rule announced Tuesday by the Biden administration. The Environmental Protection Agency rule follows through on a directive from Congress included in the 2022 climate law. The new fee is intended to encourage industry to adopt best practices that reduce emissions of methane, the primary component of natural gas, and thereby avoid paying. Methane is a climate superpollutant that is far more potent in the short term than carbon dioxide and is responsible for about one-third of greenhouse gas emissions. The oil and natural gas sector is the largest industrial source of methane emissions in the United States, and advocates say reduction of methane emissions is a crucial way to slow climate change. The rule, announced at an international climate conference in Azerbaijan, comes a day after President-elect Donald Trump named former New York Congressman Lee Zeldin to head the agency in Trump's second term, if confirmed by the Senate. Zeldin is expected to move to reverse or loosen dozens of environmental regulations approved under President Joe Biden, as Trump seeks to establish U.S. energy dominance worldwide. Trump is likely to target the methane fee amid a flurry of expected actions he has promised to deregulate the oil and gas industry. As outlined by the EPA, excess methane produced in 2024 could result in a fee of $900 per ton, with fees rising to $1,200 per ton in 2025 and $1,500 per ton by 2026. Industry groups are likely to challenge the rule, including any effort to impose a retroactive fee. The rule will not become final until next year, following publication in the Federal Register. EPA Administrator Michael Regan said in a statement that the rule will work in tandem with a new EPA rule on methane emissions imposed this year. The rule targets the U.S. oil and natural gas industry for its role in global warming, as Biden seeks to secure his legacy on fighting climate change. The fee, formerly known as the Waste Emissions Charge, will encourage early deployment of available technologies to reduce methane emissions and other harmful air pollutants, Regan said. The fee is the latest in a series of actions under President Biden's methane strategy to improve efficiency in the oil and gas sector, support American jobs, protect clean air, and reinforce U.S. leadership on the global stage, he said. Industry groups and Republican-led states have challenged the earlier methane rule in court, but lost a bid for the Supreme Court to block the rule while the case continues before lower-level judges. Opponents argue that the EPA overstepped its authority and set unattainable standards with the new regulations. The EPA, though, said the rules are squarely within its legal responsibilities and would protect the public. Many large oil and gas companies already meet or exceed methane performance levels set by Congress under the climate law, meaning they are unlikely to be forced to pay the new fee, Regan and other officials said. Even so, EPA estimates that the rule will result in cumulative emissions reductions of 1.2 million metric tons of methane, 34 million metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent, through 2025. That figure is similar to clean air gains from taking nearly 8 million gas-powered cars off the road for a year, the EPA said. Cumulative climate benefits could total as much as $2 billion, the agency said. Like the earlier methane rule, the new fee faces a near-certain challenge from industry groups. The American Petroleum Institute, the oil and gas industry's largest lobbying group, said the fee hampers our ability to meet the growing energy needs of American families and businesses and fails to advance meaningful emissions reduction. API Senior Vice President Dustin Meyer said the group looks forward to working with the Trump administration and the new Congress to repeal the fee and, quote, get this right, unquote. Environmental groups hailed the new fee, saying oil and gas companies should be held accountable for pollution that contributes to global warming. Oil and gas companies routinely calculate that it's cheaper to waste methane through flaring and other techniques than to make necessary upgrades to prevent leaks, they said. While we expect the next administration to recklessly greenlight fossil fuel extraction, it's heartening to see this effort to make polluters pay for their leakage of the superclimate pollutant methane, said Maggie Coulter, a lawyer at the Center for Biological Diversity, an advocacy group. Ultimately, we know that curbing the climate emergency requires moving quickly away from fossil fuel extraction, Coulter said. The oil and gas companies doing so much damage to our climate should have to pay for the methane leaks they've so outrageously failed to fix. This article is entitled, Diamondback Energy Seeks to Power Data Centers with Natural Gas, by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Many Permian Basin oil and gas operators routinely engage in portfolio adjustments as they seek to diversify their holdings. Diamondback Energy is seeking to diversify the customer base for its natural gas. The company is seeking to attract data centers to its 65,000 acres of holdings, offering them abundant produced water supplies and affordable natural gas. We think it's an opportunity for our shareholders to increase their income from our abundant natural gas, explained Travis Stice, Diamondback Chairman of the Board and Chief Executive Officer, as the company was honored with a reception by the Midland Wildcat Committee. Comparing the price of natural gas and the price of electricity, we felt we should participate in the electricity market, he continued. He said the current low price of natural gas certainly played a role in their calculations. Kays Van Hoff, Diamondback President and Chief Financial Officer, added that attracting data centers to its acreage and to use its natural gas to power their operations produces a lot of value for its natural gas. The goal is to diversify our portfolio, get our natural gas around the country, and also use it locally, he said. If we use 10% of that natural gas here, it will be a value uplift. He and Stice said the company's acreage could accommodate data centers. The key is to get some of the power generated by Diamondback's natural gas for its own operations, Van Hoff said. Local use reduces or eliminates the cost of transportation, the need to flare, and insulates the company from low pricing, Stice added. The concept stems from the use of microgrids in oil fields as operators try to power their operations, said Van Hoff. But we want to do it at a larger scale. The two men said they are very pleased with the integration of Endeavor Energy Resources into Diamondback, noting that they brought on board over 1,000 employees and 650 offices. Not only did we extend our production volumes and inventory duration, but we absorbed the best experts, said Stice. He added that the newly integrated entity is already realizing greater synergies sooner than expected. He said he, Van Hoff, and other Diamondback executives had told Wall Street analysts its 2025 budget would hold production volumes flat while running 23 to 25 rigs. But due to efficiency gains since the Endeavor acquisition, he said the company can keep production levels steady with 18 to 20 rigs. Van Hoff said operators are continuing to find efficiency gains as a result of consolidation, gains that will be seen in other segments like midstream and service companies. Asked how long those efficiency gains can continue, Stice likened the gains to moving down a curve. Whenever you think you've hit a flat, the team comes up with new steps, like switching Endeavor's rigs to ClearFrac. Stice said the company will be exploring some deeper zones, like the Barnett Shale, that he called intriguing and could eventually represent a positive addition to the company's inventory. This article is entitled Sibley Nature Center Hosts First Sips at Sibley Beer Tasting Event by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Sibley Nature Center is hosting its first ever Sips at Sibley event on Thursday, offering guests a beer tasting presentation by Waystone Brewing. One of our board members owns Waystone Brewing, and we have been thinking about an event like this for a while, said Misty Thomason, education director at Sibley Nature Center. The Sips at Sibley event is a family-friendly event that will offer beer tastings for free. We won't really have any crafts or activities, Thomason said. It will be more like a hangout under the stars. People could come in and taste some beer and just enjoy the company of others under our lights in the education garden. Waystone Brewing will offer beers on tap, including their Wayfest Fest Beer, the Merlin's Beard IPA, and the Twilight Imperial Stout. We are always looking for ways to get people to come out, Thomason said. We hope that an event like this also reaches those younger people who may not have kids yet, but are looking for something fun to do. She added that the education garden will be lit up nicely to allow people to hang out with others. The event will also allow people to enjoy stargazing. The event is family-friendly, so we don't have an age requirement, Thomason said. The event will be a chance for people to hang out and get to know others. Thomason added that the event is also pet-friendly and that dogs are accepted if they are on a leash. It will get dark outside while we are out in the garden, so I recommend guests bring a flashlight, a jacket, and walking shoes, Thomason said. Sips at Sibley is set for Thursday, November 14th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Sibley Nature Center, 1307 East Wadley Avenue. This article is entitled Texas Rangers Investigate Death of Man Who Shot Wife by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. Texas Rangers have stepped in to investigate a death that took place in North Midland on Monday evening. A man barricaded himself in his home in the 5500 block of Newcastle Lane after shooting his wife, according to information from the city of Midland. A standoff between the man and peace officers ensued. The man died after shots were fired, the city said. The Texas Department of Public Safety confirmed with the Reporter-Telegram that Texas Rangers are investigating because the incident involved an officer-involved shooting. Further details about the circumstances of the man's death weren't immediately available. The woman was transported to the hospital. Her condition was not known Tuesday morning, the city said. Neither the man nor woman were identified. Newcastle Lane is located in the Polo Estates area of North Midland. The Texas Rangers are a branch of the Department of Public Safety that investigate major violent crimes, public corruption, cold cases, and officer-involved shootings,
according to the DPS website. Texas Rangers also oversee DPS's border security programs, as well as tactical and crisis negotiations. This article is entitled WTX Women's Symposium Highlights Resilience and Purposeful Choices by B.K. Richter, staff writer. The goal of the 2024 WTX Women Professional Women's Symposium was to bring women together to not only reflect on their journeys, but also to help broaden both their professional and communal spheres as well. The symposium, organized by the Midland Chamber of Commerce, focused on the theme Purposeful Choices. One of the speakers, Wanda Lees Turner, gave her presentation titled Strength in Service, Building Resilience for Women Leaders. Turner, currently the Director of Development at the Jane Nelson Institute for Women's Leadership, is a U.S. Army veteran. The Institute is part of the Texas Women's University, the first university system primarily for women in the nation. Turner holds a bachelor's degree in government and a master's degree in art, political science, and history. She is also a former law enforcement officer and worked in the administration of elections at the county level, in addition to her nonprofit work in North Texas. Turner emphasized that whatever professional women have, be it entrepreneurship, public service through government work, or even home-based work, building resilience is a part of self-care. Resilience is built in nonlinear ways, she explained to an audience of more than 200 women gathered at the Bush Convention Center on Tuesday. For Turner, resilience came once she exited the military and embarked on a law enforcement career. She said she was at the community college that day to enroll in class. However, someone yanked her arm and asked if she was there for a job interview instead. I was in an all-male-dominated field, she recalled of her law enforcement experience. I was the only woman on the night shift for my shift. She shared that she did a lot of undercover roles while being a police officer because of her size and the fact that she did not look like a police officer at the time. I was perfect for undercover operations, she explained. But what a lot of that taught me is I was past the basic, you know, needs. I got my basic needs met. Now I'm looking forward to what I can learn here. But there were a lot of new roadblocks. Turner said her response to those early challenges was part of her resiliency in being able to overcome obstacles. And that's what resiliency is about. It's that preparation for those unknowns, and sometimes for the known. Turner stressed that those professional roadblocks can be tough, but preparation is vital. She told the crowd that no matter the challenge, such as returning to school or re-entering the workforce, resources for those specific challenges could be found. I don't believe in imposter syndrome, she explained. I think that's a normal part of life. And some environments are not built for us to begin with, so it's easy to feel out of place somewhere where women are not included in the building of these organizations. Turner said that growth through resilience will eventually impact one's leadership style. Once you know that you are readying yourself what's to come, then naturally that's going to translate into your organizations, into your groups, and into homes. Taylor Weidenfeld, a community health coordinator at Midland Health, also addressed the audience members with a focus on what she titled Conscious Health, Intentional Choices for the Future You. Weidenfeld shared the story of her mother, a breast cancer victim, and her own health journey of receiving genetic testing to help determine her own health needs. She said that she believes in empowering individuals to take charge of their health and well-being. Early detection and effective treatment results in the best outcomes, she explained. And so that's why we're very proactive of our breast health, is because if we do develop breast health or breast cancer, We want to make sure we are catching it at the earliest stage possible. She said that observation is key and that breasts can change throughout the lifetime of a woman. When we're young, middle-aged, older, menopause, you know, breasts are always changing. And so knowing what they are at during a normal time, then you'll know when these changes would occur and when you could reach out to your healthcare provider, she said. Additionally, Weidenfeld advocated for lifestyle changes that she said could help improve one's overall health. These lifestyle changes are going to help improve with other diseases and illnesses. And so we want to limit our alcohol, we want to eat a balanced diet with lots of fruits and veggies, and exercise. Weidenfeld encouraged women to start small by starting to eat a balanced breakfast every day or taking small walks every day. Those things will grow into bigger things and a healthier lifestyle to promote early breast health, she said. This is the Life Tributes column. Shanta Thomas, September 9, 1983 to October 28, 2024. Shanta Thomas, known for her beautiful smile and affectionately known as Smiley by her high school friends at Frederick Douglass High School in Atlanta, Georgia, went to be with her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on October 28, 2024, at the age of 41. Shanta was born to Dwayne Coleman and Tina Smith on September 9, 1983, at Grady Hospital in Atlanta. She would live in Georgia for most of her life. On May 29, 2016, Shanta married her husband, David Thomas, and moved with the children to join him in Midland. Left to cherish her memory is her husband, David, and their children, Akia Shelton Thomas, Imoni Jones, Deja Jackson, Ian Danson, Eric Danson, Jada Jackson, and Royal Thomas. Shanta is also survived by her mother, Tina Smith, stepfather, George Cooper, brother, Andaris Tonda Pace, brother, Eddie Smith, sister, Unique Cotton, stepbrother, Rayshawn Alex Cooper, all of Atlanta. Mother-in-law, Maggie Thomas of Stafford, Virginia, father-in-law, Roy Thomas of Valdosta, Georgia, sister-in-law, Tiona Rick Goble of Columbus, Georgia, sister-in-law, Kimberly Thomas of Stafford, Virginia, and a host of aunts, uncles, cousins, nieces, and nephews. Shanta is now reunited in heaven with her father, Dwayne Coleman, her stepson, Cameron Michael Lewis, paternal grandparents, Louise Haygood Smith and Thomas Smith, paternal grandparents, Minnie Coleman and Matt Coleman, and her brother, Dwayne Anthony Coleman, Jr. Shanta Thomas's celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, November 15th at Elevate Church, 200 Baldwin Street in Midland. Matthew Travis Stice, May 29, 1990 to October 19, 2024. On Saturday, October 19th, at 2:37 a.m., surrounded by his family, a choir of angels peacefully escorted our precious Matthew to heaven to be with God. Matthew Travis Stice was born in Houston on May 29, 1990, to Brenda and Travis Stice. He was the beloved brother of Elizabeth Stice Parker and Luke Stice, also brother-in-law to Kyle Parker and uncle to Emma and Wesley Parker. Left behind to treasure Matthew's memories are his granny, Sue Jones, granddad, Dale Stice, and many aunts, uncles, and cousins, along with cherished family, friends, teachers, and caregivers. Matthew is preceded in death by his nanny, Mary Ann Stice, and his papa, Francis Johns. The family will receive friends at 4 p.m. on November 22nd at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland. For those who wish to attend, a rosary will be recited immediately following in the church. A funeral mass celebrating Matthew's life will follow on November 23rd at 10 a.m., also at St. Anne's Catholic Church. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Bynum School in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle-Nwell's funeral home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Adrian Lynn Bud Lindsay, October 1, 1925 to November 11, 2024. Adrian Lynn Bud Lindsay, 99 of Stanton, formerly of Midland, passed away Monday, November 11th at his residence. He was born to parents Adam Lynn Lindsay and Esther Irene Shannon Lindsay, October 1, 1925, in Ranger, Texas. At the age of 18, he was drafted and ended up in the Army going to Europe. Bud was captured by the Germans and spent the winter of 1944-45 in Stalag 7A near Munich. Bud married Juanita Sue Anderson of Stanton on May 10, 1952, and she preceded him in death March of 2017. Bud is survived by his sister, Betty Gilmore of Asley, Texas, and 15 nieces and nephews. He will lie in state Thursday, November 14th, beginning at 11 a.m. at Gilbreth Funeral Home, with the family receiving friends from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, November 15th, at First United Methodist Church of Stanton. Interment with Fort Cavazos Army Honor Guard will follow at Evergreen Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Shirley Marie Sturgeon Brown, December 4, 1941 to November 6, 2024. Shirley Marie Sturgeon Brown was born on December 4, 1941 in DeBary, Texas, was the oldest of 13 children to Deacon Ernest William Benjamin Sturgeon Sr., Mattie Mae Grimes Sturgeon, and her stepmother, Jessie Mae Ford Sturgeon McCoy. Shirley shared her life with her beloved husband, Ellis Odell Brown Jr., with whom she had a daughter, Sheila Brown, and a stepdaughter, Glenda Valentine. On November 6, 2024, Shirley answered the eternal call from the Savior and joined her parents, husband, stepdaughter, and several siblings in eternal rest. She leaves behind her daughter, Sheila Brown of Midland, goddaughter Melissa Pertle of Midland, three grandchildren. Her siblings, including Gloria Conley Jones, Reverend Julius Jones of Midland, Apostle William Sturgeon Jr. of Kansas City, Sonora Sturgeon and Reverend Joseph Sturgeon Sr. of Omaha, Pastor Alonzo Sturgeon Sr., Evangelist Carrie Sturgeon of Denver, Deborah Sturgeon Hall of Omaha, and a loving extended family of cousins, nieces, nephews, and friends. Shirley Marie Brown's celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, November 16th at Mayberry Funeral Home, 406 East Illinois Avenue in Midland. Lelia Ruth Miller, March 2, 1927 to November 9, 2024. Lelia Ruth Miller passed away on November 9th at home at the age of 97. Born in Iredell, Texas on March 2, 1927 to Irene and Harvey Houston, and orphaned at an early age. She and her sisters Lucy and Helen were raised by her Aunt Mary in Hillsboro, Texas. She graduated high school in Hillsboro and later graduated from Hill Junior College, where she met her husband, S.T. Buddy Miller. They married in 1948 and moved to Lubbock, where Buddy studied geology at Texas Tech. They moved to Midland in the first dozen years of their marriage. Ruth is preceded in death by her sisters Lucy and Helen Houston, her husband Buddy, and her daughter Jan DeVault. She is survived by her son, A. Lee Miller, and daughter, Kay Brahaney, and her husband, Tom Brahaney of Midland, as well as four grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. A graveside service will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park on Thursday, November 14th at 3 p.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Weldon Morris Brogdon. Weldon Morris Brogdon, 93, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, November 10th. No services will be held. Arrangements have been entrusted to Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
This is Mikey, and I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, November 13th, 2024. Increased energy investments expected with Trump. New administration to herald more realistic rules for EVs, by Bob Campbell. The incoming Trump administration will renew confidence in energy industry investors and bring about a different regulatory environment with more realistic guidelines for the introduction of electric vehicles and other concerns. So say State Representative Brooks Landgraf and Waco economist Ray Perryman, who expect a noticeable improvement. As the energy industry powers not only our economy here in Texas, but also strengthens our national security, having a president in the White House who values and supports this critical sector is a welcome change, Landgraf said. I expect the Trump administration will work closely with federal agencies to eliminate the looming threats and reduce the regulatory burdens that have challenged our producers during the past 4 years. By cutting the red tape and providing regulatory consistency, I have no doubt we will see renewed capital investment in American energy, investment that translates into good-paying jobs, technological innovation, and sustainable growth for years to come. The Odessa Republican said this type of regulatory certainty will give energy companies the confidence to expand, adapt, and innovate, which will benefit not only the industry, but also the entire state of Texas. I look forward to seeing these instrumental policies support a strengthened energy-driven economy that meets the needs of today and secures prosperity for the future, he said. Perryman said the potential changes under the Trump administration are multifaceted, with the likely regulatory framework being more favorable for fossil fuels. Some of the more stringent provisions may well be modified, such as those from the Environmental Protection Agency, which effectively limit the number of gasoline or diesel vehicles that can be sold to meet overall emissions targets, Perryman said. The process for obtaining federal leases may also change, which could be particularly beneficial in the New Mexico segment of the Permian Basin. He said other aspects of various climate bills, which heavily favor renewable energy, may also shift, thus improving the relative position of natural gas in the energy complex. There is no doubt that the development of oil and gas resources must be accomplished in responsible ways which limit environmental impacts and are responsive to global climate concerns, Perryman said. The major producers are well aware of this fact, and they are investing billions of dollars in such initiatives over and above those mandated by any regulations. At the same time, it is apparent that oil and gas are going to be needed to meet future energy demand, particularly given the current state of green technologies. The recent acquisitions of shale resources by major oil companies provide ample evidence that this is recognized within the industry. The economist said there will be some lessening of the barriers to oil and gas industries under the Trump administration, but any such changes are unlikely to have major effects on production. Companies factor in many criteria in drilling and production decisions, ranging from shareholder expectations to future price projections, and any decisions will be influenced by a variety of factors, he said. It should be remembered that oil and gas production in the Permian Basin and the U.S. as a whole shattered prior records during the Biden administration. The ultimate pattern in energy markets tends to be driven by forces which go beyond the domestic policy framework. Getting a head start. ECISD Career Placement Program gives welder a leg up. Through his welding classes at Ector County ISD, Zeke Hernandez found out he could graduate from high school right into a career. A 2023 Odessa High School graduate, Hernandez is now part of the welding team at Deep Well Services. Hernandez said he gained a lot of basic knowledge from the program at ECISD. He added that he has picked up a lot from the time he started at Deepwell. I think that has to do with working with a lot of experienced people, a lot of older people that have already been in the field. For example, my manager, Hernandez said. Maintenance manager Juan Ladesma said Hernandez has accomplished a lot. From when he started, his first title was shop hand, welder assistant. Now he's a welder too, so he promoted several positions to where he's at now, Ledesma said. At first, he was a little skeptical of Hernandez being so young. But when I realized he has great motivation, I saw that he had what it took to be in his position that he's currently in now, Ledesma said. According to LinkedIn, Deepwell Services is an oilfield services company specializing in the most complex and difficult types of well work using hydraulic completion units and workover rigs. They work all over the Permian Basin, Ledesma said. Hernandez said he works wherever he's sent, but he's mostly in the shop. He said his family is mainly diesel mechanics. Hernandez said he took welding, thinking that if he liked it, he'd stick with it, and if he didn't, he wouldn't lose anything. I just gained basic knowledge because originally I wanted to be a nurse. But I really got stuck on this, and I saw that I could make a career out of this, he added. He enjoys being able to make new things and solve problems in fabricating and safety, figuring out how to keep people safe. Coming on board at Deepwell Services presented a learning curve for Hernandez. He had a basic knowledge of how to weld from school, but at his job he had to learn how to pull measurements and fabricate. I think that was a big change, Hernandez said. He added that he has learned a lot from other welders and thinks he will stick with the trade. He hopes to use it as a way to enter the wider world of the oil field. He's also enjoyed meeting new people. Eventually, he would like to start his own business and be his own boss. The job was what he expected, but it also wasn't. There was a lot on social media portraying all the money you can make and big trucks, but he found there's a lot more to it. I kind of had to adapt and learn, because there are a lot of social media out there, and then when you're actually doing it, it's completely different. The responsibility is way different. It's not what you picture, but it's honestly a lot better than what I imagined, Hernandez said. Asked if he thinks he'll go back to school and further his education, he said there are two ways to get into the industry. You can go in as a hand and move your way up and learn from other people. A lot of people have made it that way, and there are a lot of people that go straight out of school, but both ways have proven that they could work. It just depends on which route you want to take, honestly, Hernandez said. He sees himself as a role model for his two younger siblings. His dad is Gerardo and his mom is Melina. I used to not think that it was a big deal, but my brother copies me a lot of stuff. He looks at me and he wants to be just like me, so sometimes I have to put on a good example, Hernandez said. He added that he would recommend the career placement program to other students. I would recommend it just because in this field of work, it really helps to know people and to talk with people and have connections, because that can help you get another job later on, move up the chain as well. So I think jumping in straight out of high school and you can meet a lot of people, and that really gives you the upper hand, Hernandez said. Investigations underway in City of Odessa by Kim Smith. Despite letters sent to the Texas Attorney General's office and the Texas Department of Public Safety saying otherwise, there is no abuse of official capacity investigation underway within the city of Odessa. However, Odessa City Attorney Dan Jones confirmed Monday night that Deputy City Manager Agapito Bernal is currently being investigated by an outside law firm hired by the city, and he intends to ask Ector County District Attorney Dusty Galivan to seek a Texas Rangers investigation into Equipment Services Director Chris Adams. Last month, the Odessa American filed two open records requests with the City of Odessa after receiving tips that complaints had been filed against Bernal with Human Resources and City Manager John Beckmeyer, and that Adams had been misusing his government purchase card. The Odessa American was later notified the city had asked the Texas Attorney General's office for a legal opinion on both of its requests. According to a letter sent to the AG's office by Jones on October 18th, the requests are tied together and the release of the information would interfere with the detection, investigation, or prosecution of crime. The city has a legitimate interest in preserving the secrecy of its records from the eyes of defendants and their counsel in criminal actions, Jones wrote. He further stated that the city's internal auditor is still investigating and the city of Odessa will need to gather all evidence for the Texas Rangers and the premature release of information may hinder their investigation. It is in the city's opinion that Exhibit B and Exhibit C are related to Texas Penal Code, Penal 3902, Abuse of Official Capacity, Jones wrote. In a second letter dated October 18th, Jones informed DPS Assistant General Counsel M.L. Calcote that the OA had requested information about Bernal and Adams, and he'd sought an opinion from the AG about the release of such information. Jones noted the information sought by the OA include records we received from you or from your company. He also informed the lawyer she could object to the release of the documents. However, emails released by the City of Odessa Monday indicate Calcote was confused when the city's public information coordinator sent her copies of the Odessa American's TPIA requests on October 23rd, along with other documents to review. She was informed Jones had spoken with Texas Ranger John Schock, and Jones thought Schock would be speaking with the Hector County Attorney's Office as to how to proceed. On October 24th, Calcote responded, "At this time, the Rangers do not have an investigation. You may want to talk to the DA, since I believe that office would be the entity that would ask the Rangers to open an investigation." On Monday night, Jones said he will be seeking an appointment with Gaivan to discuss Gaivan seeking a Rangers investigation into Adams about the purchase card allegations and discoveries made by the city's internal auditor, Calla Hardy. Also reached Monday, Gaivan said if a formal complaint is filed and there is some evidence of a criminal act, yes, I would ask. As for Bernal, Jones said there's an internal investigation going on right now. He's being investigated by an outside law firm for possible wrongdoing. He declined to comment further. Bernal is one of our four city officials who have three-year contracts with the city that would require the city to pay out the remainder of their contracts when they leave, regardless of the circumstances. The others are Beckmeyer, Jones, and City Secretary Norma Aguilar. Hector County Commissioner Don Stringer emailed Beckmeyer back in August that Adams was using a city-owned vehicle to drive back and forth to his home in Lubbock, thus violating a city policy. Emails obtained by the Odessa American under the TPIA show Beckmeyer told Adams to stop using the vehicle to commute. Other documents the OA obtained also showed four of Adams' employees filed separate, unrelated complaints against him in October 2023, and none resulted in disciplinary actions being taken against him. Employees accused Adams of being disrespectful to employees and vendors, drinking at a city event and driving afterward, discussing matters of a sexual nature, being a cool club member within the city, and openly stating he was going to use his purchase card to pay for golf. Quick Hits. Bright Star. The Bright Star Memorial on the University of Texas Permian Basin's campus will be temporarily closed to the public to allow for additional construction elements and landscaping enhancements. These updates are intended to enrich the memorial's appearance and ensure a lasting and impactful experience for all visitors. The memorial will reopen briefly from November 25th through December 1st to provide families and visitors an opportunity to enjoy the plaza over the Thanksgiving holiday. Following this period, the Bright Star Memorial will close once again from December 2nd to early January 2025 to finalize the remaining construction and landscape details. UTPB appreciates the community's patience and support as they complete the enhancements to the Bright Star Memorial. UTPB looks forward to reopening in early 2025 and providing a meaningful space for reflection and connection. Ring the Bell. The Salvation Army is excited to announce the return of its annual Red Kettle campaign in Midland and Odessa, spreading joy and the festive spirit of Christmas. As the Salvation Army's primary fundraising initiative, the Red Kettles play a vital role in providing life-changing programs and services throughout the year. These programs include food assistance, shelter for people experiencing homelessness, emergency financial assistance, youth programs, disaster response, and more. From the beginning of November until Christmas Eve, Red Kettles will be stationed outside various stores and local businesses in Midland and Odessa from Monday to Saturday. Last year, the Salvation Army successfully raised $186,000 through the campaign. And this season, they are aiming to raise $250,000 to support year-round services in the community. The Salvation Army is seeking volunteers to ring the bells at the Red Kettle. Sign up by visiting registertoring.com and following the prompts to select the date and time to ring, or call the Salvation Army at 432-683-3614. Visit salvationarmy.com, call 432-683-3614, or visit 600 East Wall Street in Midland, or call 432-332-0738, or visit 810 East 11th Street in Odessa to donate or learn more about how you can support the Salvation Army this Christmas. Whole Health. Midland Health will have a Whole Health Wellness Symposium from 9 a.m. to noon, November 16th, in the Carrasco Room at Midland College. There is an optional 1:30 p.m. cooking demonstration at the West Texas Food Bank. Separate registration is required. The event is free and will provide an insight into all the pillars of lifestyle, medicine, and help you improve your health span. For more information, email info@ourhealthycity.com.
This is the Dear Abby column. A brief thank you note has an outsized impact. Dear Abby, some time ago, you printed a letter from a grandmother who said she was changing her will because neither her adult children nor her grandchildren ever wrote her thank you notes when she sent a gift. I had taught my son the importance of writing thank you notes, but he wasn't doing a very good job of completing the process. I cut out the letter from your column and sent it to him. Boy, what a difference it made. He was recently married, and many people have told me what heartfelt thank you notes they received in a timely manner and how much they were appreciated. He recently had a birthday, and every person who wished him well got a written thank you. Abby, please continue to remind your readers about the importance of thankfulness and kindness and what that means to others. Entitlement has gotten way out of hand. Handwritten thank you notes are not old-fashioned. They lift the giver's heart. Thank you. Signed, Tamara in California. Dear Tamara, the subject of thank you notes is one of the most common complaints I receive from readers. Some people put off writing them because they have difficulty expressing themselves via the written word, don't know what to say, or are afraid they'll say the wrong thing. I advise readers to have a notebook handy when they open gifts and jot down the first words that come to mind when they see what's inside. For some reason, they mistakenly believe a thank you must be long and flowery when, in fact, short and to the point is more effective. Do they like the color, the style? Is the gift something they've been wanting? Write it down and use it for inspiration. My letters booklet contains samples of thank you notes for birthday gifts, shower gifts, wedding gifts, and those that arrive at holiday time. It can be ordered by sending your name and mailing address, plus a check or money order for $8 in U.S. funds, to Dear Abby Letters Booklet, P.O. Box 447, Mount Morris, Illinois, 61054-0447. Shipping and handling are included in the price. You will find it also contains sample letters of congratulations, as well as for difficult subjects, such as the loss of a parent, spouse, or child. Many readers have told me my booklet has served as a valuable tool in teaching their children basic good manners. Dear Abby, I am elderly and stuck in a miserable marriage. The romance is long gone. We live as roommates. If I were to die tomorrow, I don't think anyone would miss me. I'm partially disabled, and it is difficult for me to get out on my own. Must I accept life as it is, or should I kick his butt out? Signed, Hopeless in Texas. Dear Hopeless, if you are financially dependent upon your husband or need his help for personal needs, I do not recommend kicking his butt out. Contact your nearest senior center and ask what activities are offered in your community, including transportation for seniors or people with disabilities. If you do, you may be pleasantly surprised to discover you are not as isolated as you think. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.